A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The lights probably gone.
So had the stairs.
You are just number six.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 486. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about Shalkin the Painter. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
We are back to continue looking at this ghost story from 1979 on the BBC. It was a 70-minute show that is a visual spectacular, a feast for the eyes, looking at these mid to late 1600s artworks, paintings from the Dutch masters from Amsterdam. And this is based on a short story by Sheridan Le Fanu and deals with the consequences of making unwise deals, as so many ghost stories do.
Yes. Choose wisely in these classic ghost stories. I suppose if people did make wise choices, they wouldn't get the rest of the actions or the consequences.
Indeed.
So last time we talked about the mysterious Van der Huysen, this strange figure who turns up to make a deal with the aging painter Gerrit Dou and offer him a box full of gold in return for his niece's hand in marriage. And we're going to talk a little bit about Van der Huysen and some more details of the plot now. So we are starting to get into spoilerish territory here, Brian. People should probably go and watch the show before listening to the rest of this if they intend to.
I think that's a good idea, yes.
So Rose has been traded away for this box full of gold and gone off with Van der Huysen of Rotterdam.
That's right. And Dou and his apprentice, Shalkin, hear nothing more about her until one night when she arrives. She just shows up and she's terrified and pleads for their help. And Van der Huysen is this tall, imposing figure with a very strange appearance and a deep, gravelly voice, and this habit of sort of appearing from the background in these gloomy, candlelit rooms. And when Shalkin is sent to look for him, nobody in Rotterdam has heard of Van der Huysen or of Rose, for that matter.
So we're left with this mystery. Who is Van der Huysen? Is there any significance in his name, meaning of the house? Where did he take Rose? And we're going to say that opinions, both within and outside the story, vary on this. Particularly in the story and in the TV version, Rose tells her uncle, Gerrit Dou, that Van der Huysen resembles a grotesque wood carving that she saw in a Rotterdam church when she was a child. This is also where Van der Huysen claims he first saw her. I would say that Gerrit Dou's sort of impaired vision makes it difficult for him to assess the ghastly figure of Van der Huysen. And in terms of the creators of this show, it's interesting that on the disc extras, director and writer Leslie Megahay refers to Van der Huysen as Death, while the cinematographer John Hooper refers to him as the devil. And then if we go even beyond that, Brian, if we look at essays discussing Le Fanu's original short story, I've read analysis that suggests he is a vampire figure, or that he is in some respects a sort of prototypical zombie, the living dead. There's all sorts of explanations to who this mysterious figure is.
Yes, it is sort of interesting. The short story ends with Shalkin collapsing and waking up in a vault that contains a sealed coffin. The description of Van der Huysen in the story includes two fangs protruding over his lips, leading to this idea of him being a vampire or vampire-like character.
And of course, we know Le Fanu wrote that influential vampire story, Carmilla, which I think was in 1872. And this story is published in 1839, so he's still quite some time before Bram Stoker's Dracula in the late 1890s, 1897 it was. So interesting to think of this. Was this a prototypical vampire story? Who knows?
Yeah, it's interesting. We think of Lefanu's vampire as being from Carmela, which it certainly was. But yeah, interesting idea that it could have been here even earlier. So we should talk about some of the themes of this production, because there's something to say there. There is quite a bit in there about the position of women in the 1600s and about them being treated as property, as possessions, and specifically about this, you know, the hand in marriage, about them being bought and sold.
Yeah, it's fascinating that when Rose pleads with Shulkin to run away with her, he says instead he's going to work for enough money so that he's able to buy her back from Van der Huysen, which is strange to our eyes. And as you say, Brian, women at this time seem to be just possessions. They are, or if they're not, they are serving maids who are also seen to be paid for sex or used as artistic models, or they're just, unfortunately, sex workers who are bought, stripped, washed, and then posed for the artists to create artworks. And in this story and this TV show, it's men doing all the buying and selling. And even if they get offered the choice of an escape for love, or even possibly for artistic purity, they tend to reject it in favor of their career, their money and fame that the art world is going to bring them.
Yeah, even Shulkin himself, who is shown as being sort of more young and idealistic and wanting to court and marry for love, he can still be bought when the price is high enough and goes along with all of this. You know, he sort of shows these or pretends to have these romantic and artistic ideals, but avoids those opportunities and sets them aside in favor of gold. So it's pretty clear what's happening and how people are being viewed there. And by the end of the film, he is tormented with a vision of what he rejected or set aside.
He is indeed in a rather sort of dramatic and unusual ending to this story on screen. And as you've said, Brian, both the painters that we see, Gerrit Dou and then Shulkin in his later career, they both get at some point made an offer which they initially reject, and then when they see the size of or the amount of money that they're being offered, they reconsider and they choose the option of getting paid, don't they?
Yes. Even for the idealists, there is a price that's high enough that they will put everything else aside.
And while we're discussing themes, I don't know if we can call darkness a theme in this show. Possibly we can. Certainly, it does a very good impression of telling us what living in a candlelit world was like. There's an awful lot of darkness around the edges of this show. And of course, that reflects what we know about Shulkin's paintings and some of the paintings we've looked at in preparation for this episode. It is all very dark and gloomy and lit by nothing more than candles, Brian.
Yes, that definitely does sort of give this its visual feel. So I think we should get into some of our own thoughts more than we already have. Eamon, what did you like about Shulkin the painter?
Well, I think we have to talk about the visuals of this show and this production, Brian, because, and I know that I often say this about BBC productions in particular, but it does look absolutely stunningly gorgeous. We do have these sort of recreations of paintings or the look of certain famous paintings. We've got this wonderful mastery of light and darkness, and of course the costumes and the wigs and so on. But it just looks fabulous, Brian, I thought. What about you?
Yes, it looks like nothing else. It brings the masterworks, these paintings, onto screen so we can see what the paintings look like and we can see the models modeling for those paintings and the how things are physically arranged and how candles are set up, so we can can see the live-action visual and how it relates to the painting that is done. And they're sort of reconstructing what these scenarios that were set up might have looked like based on the paintings. And then they're bringing that sort of general feel further out into all of the scenes for this. So the look of it, but how it brings the look from the paintings into the rest of the world and how it shows the paintings, that was something kind of special in this.
And it sort of even goes into how some of this artwork was produced. We get to see models being posed, get to hear some of the interpretation of what's going on. We see Shulkin doing sort of rather laborious ways of transferring drawings to a canvas so that he can then paint on top of that. Clearly stuff that, you know, the artistic consultant was working on them with. It's all fascinating. It is this art history and this art itself being brought to the screen before our eyes.
Yeah, it's very interesting seeing that being done and being done in a dramatic fashion. So I don't think this quite qualifies as a speculative documentary, as we've categorized some things that way, but it almost feels reminiscent of that in some ways.
Hats off to Anna Ridley for the designs and John Hooper for the lighting and the cinematography. Filmed on 16mm film, so we don't get, I mean, there's an awful lot of candles, Brian, but we don't get that ghosting that we remember from 1970s productions on video, where the sort of light leaves a sort of trail as people move them about. Partly, I suppose, that's because there's an awful lot of moving about in this show. It's quite static in a way.
Yes, but shooting this on film was a good choice. I think that worked well.
Performances?
They were good. They didn't let anything down, but they don't stand out all that much because there is so little dialogue and there isn't that much for them to do.
Yeah, it's interesting. Not a lot of dialogue, not a lot of sort of action and moving about. John Justin as Van der Huysen literally just has to stand or sit in place and not move. And he is often revealed by the camera just panning slightly to reveal that he's been standing in a doorway or he's standing behind someone, which is chilling in the way it's done. Yeah, I mean, some of it's a bit stiff, but as you say, Brian, that sort of suits the look they were going for, that these are almost paintings that we're being shown on screen in this art history lecture that has a horror element to it. I'd also say how lovely to have Charles Gray's voice as Lefanu, as the narrator. I just love Charles Gray's voice in everything, so terrific to have him.
Yes, that was nice. Have we covered the positives now? Or are we ready to get into some negatives?
Well, I'll just say one quick one, which is that the package from the BFI is a nice one. Two discs, a booklet, and extras. That's, you know, the BFI putting the good stuff on there.
Yes, that is very nice, and they have some nice choices for extras there.
So, time for some less good art. What would you say in the negatives column, Brian?
Yeah, so as interesting as those visuals are, the ghost story itself is not particularly interesting. And as a ghost story, we've covered a lot of ghost stories now, and most of them I think I would prefer to watch to this, especially if I'm thinking about things in ghost story terms rather than about these visual things.
Yes, I think we have certainly seen a lot better ghost stories, and the short story itself is not my favorite. It's a show I'm going to suggest that we probably going to think that it's more important for other stuff rather than just the ghost story at the heart of it.
Yeah, that's right. And that's sort of an issue that you're, as you say, it's at the heart of it. You're presenting this as a ghost story, and the ghost story is not the part that was more interesting, and I think it's not particularly strong as a ghost story.
Now, there's a lack of dialogue, there's a lack of action. Even the death of one character is sort of seen off camera, as it were, and we only see the aftermath of it. Does that impact on this production?
It didn't bother me as much as some things in this production do. It sort of fits in with the visual style of this, that it's all about paintings.
Right.
I don't know that it helped, but it didn't bother me too much.
Okay. It does perhaps drag a bit, particularly in the sort of second half for its 70 minutes, which seems unusual. But, you know, perhaps it could have been a slightly shorter, more ghost story for Christmas length story. What else did you have in the negatives? Because I sense you have other problems that you found, Brian.
Yeah, the sexism in this makes it difficult to watch.
Yeah.
It really does. And I think in the original 19th century story, that was sort of matter of fact, it was just there, I think. But in the television production, I think they were trying to confront that a little bit and to either make it less a part of it or to sort of punish the characters for it. But I don't think that works very well. And I think we just have something that is intensely sexist here, and that sort of casts across the whole thing and makes it difficult to watch.
It is a big problem that this show treats, or rather the story treats, women as just possessions, as we've said, just things to be bought and sold. And the men in this show, you know, Dow and Shulkin, don't come out of this particularly well. They are just interested in their careers and the money that goes with it.
Yeah, and if that were sort of part of the theme and they were confronting that more, it would be a little better. But they didn't do that enough. I think they tried to do a little bit, but they really didn't do it enough.
Right. Does it manage to do what they set out to do, the art history show that becomes the horror film, or does it remain just art history and a snapshot of terrible sexism?
That is an interesting question. I think the artistic visuals are really interesting here, and it does connect that to the story. So in that sense, it works, but the story it's connecting it to is just not all that good, unfortunately.
Right. It's an interesting bracket at either end of the Lawrence Gordon Clark and Rosemary Hill Ghost Story of Christmas series. We have Jonathan Miller's Whistle and I'll Come For You, and then at the other end of Omnibus we have Shulkin the painter. I find that fascinating.
Yes, that is interesting. With Whistle and I'll Come For You, you had the advantage of having an M.R. James story there.
Yeah.
And those are better than this one.
Yeah, even though M.R. James was an admirer of Lefanu's ghost stories, his ghost stories, James's ones, are better.
Yeah, for sure. Certainly comparing to this one from Lefanu. If we were talking about Carmela, I would have more that would be positive to say about the original story.
Right. Now, I know that, because I only found this when I started to do the work and research this show. Of course, it is a December 1979 show. We could have almost done this in our December schedule, but my bad, we missed that one.
We could have, but we have something else there, and this is, you know, this works at a different time of year as well, I think.
Yeah. Okay, fascinating piece of art history on the BBC. Anything else in the goods or bads to say about it before we recommend, Brian?
I think we should move on to our recommendations.
Okay, whose turn is it to go first? Do you want to jump in?
Why don't you go first?
Okay, I'm going to say, actually, I am going to recommend this show. I'm going to recommend it for the art history. I think, as you say, Brian, the art history and the recreation of the world of Amsterdam in the late 1600s and all those famous paintings you're going to see on screen do make this worth watching, particularly if you've got the £2 streaming option, which I think is probably, in view of some of the other difficulties we've had with this show, is probably the best option, although I am still quite pleased with my BFI package. So I'm going to surprise myself and actually recommend this show, Brian. What about yourself?
I am not going to recommend this. There are interesting things with the visuals and what they do with the art history. That was quite nice to see. But with the level of the story we have here, and especially with the level of sexism in here, it's just too uncomfortable and too uninteresting in ghost story terms to make it worthwhile. So no, I will not recommend Chalkin the Painter.
Okay. If you have seen the show, if you've read the short story by Sheridan Le Fanu, if you want to get in touch and let us know, do drop by on the socials and tell us what you thought.
Absolutely. I would love to hear some other thoughts about this. So, in summary, Chalkin the Painter brought us into the 1600s and the world of the Dutch masters and their paintings, and brought us images of the paintings themselves and of the models and scenarios that were set up in order to paint those paintings, and the visual world of the paintings went out to the entire production and the entire show. It also brings us this ghost story about the mysterious Vanderhuizen offering a case of gold in exchange for the hand in marriage of Rose, the niece of one of the painters, and brings us the story of what happens when the painters cannot resist such an offer.
Interesting stuff. Now, please come back next time. We're going to have a bit more fun, I think, next time, Brian, because we're looking at a claymation show for children, and it is time for us to open up The Trapdoor. That's right, Trapdoor, the ITV show from 1986. Something a little bit lighter to talk about next time, Brian.
Yes, that should be fun to get to some 1980s claymation.
Indeed.
Until then, you can find all of our episodes, including the ones that aren't in the podcast feed anymore, at BritishInvaders.com. And if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our group there and join in on some of the conversations there. You can also follow us on Instagram and on Threads and talk to us there too. We are at British_Invaders_podcast on both of those platforms.
Yes, please drop by the socials, tell us if you've seen this show, and tell us what is your favorite television ghost story of all time. Be interesting to hear from you.
Yes, absolutely.
And please drop by The Voice of Geeks at vognetwork.com, The Voice of Geeks Network, for podcasts, for gaming, for streaming, all sorts of stuff going on at vognetwork.com. Tell them Brian and Eamon sent you.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Eamon in England also signing off and saying, look into the dark.